This is Unlock Your Soul podcast, a platform where we get to scratch beneath the surface and reveal what really makes us human. Karibu Nairobi. When was the first time, what is your memory that is, of the first time when you were in Nairobi? How did that feel? Were you conned? Were you robbed? Were you just excited by the sights and sounds, the flora and the fauna, all of that things? Because Nairobi is like a real jungle. But if there's anybody in Nairobi who knows this town more than anybody else, it's Mr. Wango Alfred. Let's unlock the keys to Nairobi with Wango. Okay, what's up? Welcome to Unlock Your Soul with yours truly, Anthony Your Soul. I am with one of Kenya's finest artists. He is a visual storyteller. He is into hiking. He is, what is he? He's a history connoisseur. Has anybody ever called you that? Nobody, please.
Enthusiast.
Yeah, what is that? Enthusiasm, yanani.
Yeah,
me, I've called you history connoisseur.
Okay.
Why, first and foremost, I want to understand, why were you afraid of doing this interview, yet you're such an extrovert?
Bro, sisi ni watu behind the scenes always, man. I'm always behind the scenes, behind the camera. So, we are not used to like, eyes.
I feel like this is your new phase. You know when artists start being problematic? And you know me, I don't do this thing nowadays.
Nah,
I try to keep to myself.
Nah, we're not used to this, man.
But you could not say no to me because I will hunt you, haunt you. I will call your mother.
Podcasting happen at a submarine.
Thank you. I would have looked for you everywhere. So as you do this, you also love sketching a lot.
Yeah, man. I enjoy live sketching.
How did you get into it? Why not? Because you do landscapes, you do people, you do architecture.
Yeah.
How did you get into all of this?
I think most of it comes from my school. I have a background in landscape architecture.
Yeah.
So I studied landscape architecture in JKUAT.
Yeah.
And there's this one skill that was, the lecturers would insist a lot on sketching.
Yeah.
It's a way of communicating ideas visually. So from being an idea in your head into something that a client can see and okay, now I understand your idea.
Exactly.
So the lecturers would insist a lot on that.
Mm.
And that's how I picked. I already had a background in drawing, but live sketching wasn't a thing that I did a lot.
Yeah.
So with that happening in school, nikajipata sketching a lot, you know, practicing and you know, my hand got better and better. I got quicker.
Yeah.
I could, because it's more of, you know, what you interpret, what you see, and now interpreting it with your arm onto a sketch pad.
Yeah.
So that's how, like, this live sketching thing became a thing,
but,
and
communicating
with it.
But I also know you don't come from, like, you know, and people assume that people, like, creatives are from, like, bougie homes where there's, like, money floating around. You're allowed to be expressive and be creative.
Yeah.
You come from, like, from Eastlands, and I know your mom played a huge role in supporting what you do.
Yeah.
How was it growing in Eastlando when other kids were probably playing football? Do you want to live sketch them or playing with them, but still your mind is in, I want to color, I want to paint?
At the time, actually, it was more of, there was this whole culture, because Eastlands is like the cradle of Nairobi culture.
Yeah.
So at the time as a kid is when matatu culture was like really big.
Yeah.
So nakumbuka in primary school, guys would compete like who's drawing.
You are from which hood? 5'8".
Yeah.
From Buruburu.
Yeah, man. So
but those days you guys used to have the best matatus.
Yo, yeah, ilikuwa like
those days. I want you to remember that you guys nowadays.
Now tulihama, but
please,
you know,
there are no matatus in 5'8". They are just uko ni mawangora.
Manze, but at the time nakumbuka ulikuwa na like, the matatu culture was big.
Yeah.
There. So even in school, kila msena takuona who's drawing the hottest matatu.
Yeah.
And I think it felt fun rather than that, like subconsciously you're not trying to be like this dope artist, but you know, you're just trying to be cool in the class.
Yeah.
So at the time, that's how it was. But I remember at some point, like there are these guys who are teaching kids stuff to do with art in Madare.
Yeah.
So I'd go a lot to Mathare on weekends. My mom mm-hmm. would take me there.
Wow.
So I sharpened my skills a lot. I got introduced to the art space at that young age because you're meeting this artist from Mathare.
Yeah.
Na kidogo, it's a sense of community.
Yeah.
So it kind of built a foundation. So even by the time I went into boarding school, a couple of months after that, all through kumalizana na high school, like the foundation was really strong.
Yeah.
So even if like you went to schools that don't have art or like where you're caught drawing stuff, time your class, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
At least the foundation was very solid. After that, you know, continue pursuing this thing.
So you owe your mom a huge, huge, like,
no doubt, bro.
Favor. Aye?
No doubt. No doubt.
Because your mom, I mean, whose mom in Nairobi takes them to, actually, let's go to the art scene. Ah, let's go and try out this.
Yeah.
Most moms will be like, nime kwambia usome.
Yeah, but I appreciate also the fact that at the time, alikuwa in this whole space, civic education. Because at the time, you know, the civic education space worked a lot na artists, you know, to propagate all this. You know, you're trying to teach people about the constitution.
Yeah.
So you definitely have to use artists, you know, to do all these campaigns.
Yeah.
So I think that element also by association in this idea, you know, her being in these spaces and me being introduced to this.
Able to tell your mom something nice that you've never told her today. Mom, your mom is seated right here. Able to tell her.
Yeah, man.
Start with dear mom.
Dear my too. A whole lot of love. Yeah. Always.
Are you? You're done? Yeah. I thought you just said mom in your native language and then you moved on.
And I join am
pendant. Tell her
sana.
Dear mom.
Yeah.
Because of you, mom.
Yeah, always grateful. I'm always grateful. Yeah.
Your mom is gonna be like, that son, that boy, that son of mine, not you, me. That son of mine, he's saying the truth. Why are you not saying the whole thing? Anyway, so I mean, it's nice that you we've spoken about, you know, how moms and parents, you know, will be able to support us. And I feel like this season of this podcast, I really feel like it's coming down to parenthood. Because parenthood towards kids who are rebellious, kids who are creative, kids who, you know, sometimes lose the way, but towards kids, period.
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah.
Do you have kids? And if you don't, will you sort of raise them up with the same sort of, you know, some sort of free will? Like, I want you to do it. I want you to go to school, but I want you to also be you.
Yeah, because ideally, I feel like all these are components of a human being.
Yeah.
If they express themselves in a certain way, I don't really need to, like, put that down.
Yeah.
Ideally, it's just exposing them to, or creating that space that creative space or their creative self can thrive.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't have kids, but I feel...
That you know of.
Yeah?
That you know of.
Kids that I know of.
You don't have kids that you know of.
Ah, we watch them.
The ones that you don't know of. You don't know.
Bro,
maybe you got some chick pregnant and then she was like, that's an artist. I will not let my kid suffer. Let me not tell him.
We are not moving mad.
You don't know. You don't know anything.
By daily, I feel, when it gets to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ni ku acknowledge pia this person is, they're also an individual.
Yeah.
They're a human being.
Yeah.
Like, they might not even end up being artists.
Yeah.
They might decide to go a different way of being more of a thinker than a creative. And it's not in my place to make sure that they always have to be artists.
Yeah.
It's just that you create that conducive space and habitat for them to thrive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of conducive space and spaces that you're very much a part of, Mr. Wango Alfred, you're also big on the creative and the Nairobi space, and you have an amazing venture called Karibu Nairobi.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's such a beautiful movement because we see monuments and we see spaces and we feel them and we texturize them in our memory as being either bad or good or historical or whatever, just we have a memory of them that is not really the memory that we should have.
Okay.
Like, if you think of Uhuru Park, let's say we have a memory of Wangari Maathai, been beaten up by the police.
Yeah.
But we should really ask ourselves, why was she being beaten up?
Yeah.
To safeguard that memory and the sanctity of that Uhuru Park.
For sure.
But you have taken it a step further. You have educated yourself about these spaces. You are, you have immersed yourself about these spaces.
Yeah.
So I really feel that it's important for me to give you your flowers because I thank you for keeping that memory and culture alive.
Yeah.
Because this is the problem that we have with colonization is that a lot of times we didn't tell our stories, so we never knew who we were.
Yeah.
So you're helping us to know who we are as Nairobians.
Yeah, for sure.
So what is Karibu Nairobi? And what I want you to sketch today, I don't want you to sketch me.
Okay.
I want you to sketch maybe something that comes to memory, the one thing that is etched in your memory when you think about Nairobi, as you tell us about Nairobi.
So ideally, Karibu Nairobi is quite an interesting brand. It began with the passion of sharing images of Nairobi.
Yeah.
So at some point I bought like this phone that I had saved up for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it had a beautiful camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself taking photos of stuff anytime I'm in a matatu or walking around Nairobi.
Yeah.
Because as a photographer, you get to see an image before you take it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the time, now you have a camera that you can pop up quick and get an image. So that's how it began. And I was like, okay, let me now, you know, open a platform where I can share these images and show people like, this is how Nairobi looks like.
Yeah.
Once you decide to stop and just look, not just see things.
Yeah.
So ideally I was like, let me start a diary of images, and that's how Karibu Nairobi is like. Wow. Welcome to this this crazy place that at times is also very subtle.
You really love Nairobi, you as Wango.
Yeah, man, born and bred in this city.
Yeah.
So we have to put it out there.
Yeah.
The same way other people are putting their cities out there.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, for someone like you and I, we don't have a countryside. Like, I don't know about you, I don't have a countryside in the sense that my father's... You were there with me when I called my dad. I called my dad.
Sure.
My father's great grandfather was born here, which was called Enkare. There was no Nairobi. This is where they were born.
Yeah.
So I don't know anywhere else that I can go. And I think that's why I love Karibu Nairobi.
Mm.
Because for me, it's like, finally I get to know where I'm born.
Yeah.
And all these good and crazy and interesting pieces that make up the puzzle that is Nairobi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us some interesting things about this town that maybe we take for granted.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the King African Rifles on Yonkenata Avenue.
Mm.
We know it for what? When there is what? Running battles between protesters and the police.
Mm.
Or just the name is synonymous with the first prime minister or the first president of this country.
Mm.
But do we know the significance of those three men? Yeah. The statue of the three men who are standing there?
Yeah, because ideally, that monument on Kenyatta Avenue, they were basically war memorial monuments. Because at the time you had, when the World War was happening, and all these British, like the British forces and all the other countries involved in the World War, they needed extra hands.
Yeah.
So all these Africans were taken to the war.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, some of them were porters, carrying weapons and all that, you know, making sure that things are moving.
Yeah.
And so after the war, definitely a lot of them died as well.
Mm-hmm.
And now these monuments are created just in memory of them.
And
if you look closely, they've been written those who took part in the Great War. Because that's when the First World War was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, they didn't know that a Second World War would happen.
Wow.
So if you go kiangalia closely, you realize, the 1939 to 1945 is a bit different from the 1914 to 1918.
So in terms of like the font or in terms of like the creation.
Yeah, you see one has aged a bit compared to the other. So ideally
That's the one that looks like a triangle, because I noticed one time the one that's opposite the monument.
Yeah, the Zikombe.
I was like, why does this look different in terms of like the quality?
Yeah, so ideally Kenyatta Avenue was among like the first streets in Nairobi, because it was, I think it was the first dual carriage street in Nairobi.
Yeah.
Had a lot of banks as well, where Bank of India is.
Yes.
That was where the Legislative Council was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of banks coming in, inclusive of the Bank of India, which is the first bank in Kenya.
Where KCB is, Kipande House. And how they'd keep, I think they used to keep some of the stuff for building the railway there.
Exactly. Actually, the railway is going to peter through Kenyatta Avenue.
Yeah.
Then at some point it got too noisy and they had to take it where railway is right now.
Do you wish it stayed? I wish it stayed.
I don't know. Considering, like, imagine those trains passing through.
No, Kenyatta, but also it would have made movement very easy. Imagine you live in a Lavington.
Uh-huh.
By the way, guys, this guy, I've realized that you're into the bougie life. Or bougie life was always meant for you.
Nah, bro.
His studio uh-huh. is in the most posh.
Bro, once I think
estate in Kenya, which is Lavington, one
now,
of the most
once
posh.
In a while you need to move out of, you know, the space you're in. You get to see what's on the other side.
You know, and creatives, I told you, you're in that problematic phase as an artist. You're in that Basquiat phase of like, instead of saying you're a diva, you say, you know, once in a while. As an artist, you need to fill yourself with spaces.
Lazima, you know, you go to check out other spaces, see what's on the other side.
Oh my God, let's go back to Karibu, Nairobi. For anyone who's coming to Nairobi, and we are saying Karibu, Nairobi, first, they need to look for you so you can take them around.
Yeah.
But apart from that, and we'll give you handles and everything, what are the three places somebody either born here or who isn't born here, they must experience in Nairobi? And okay. I know I don't want to give a number, but for purposes of time, what are the three places? Yeah.
Number one, highly recommended, the Kenya National Archives.
Kenya National Archives.
Yeah, man.
Which, by the way, 99% of Nairobians... Man. Go through there to go and get their public service vehicles. They do not know what exists inside there.
Bro, it's 50 shillings.
And they don't even know what is inside. Shillings.
Yeah, because it's a whole collection by Kenya's second vice president, Murumbi.
Yeah.
And man, he did a service to us considering like his collection was very huge that the British Museum wanted to buy like that collection.
Wow.
But he was like, let my people learn about, you know, their history and culture.
Yeah.
So it's very important for people just to go check out what's there.
And let's give a bit of context more to Murumbi, apart from being the vice president, and how he literally went far and wide.
Yeah.
And here we mean he would go to Moyale, to Isiolo, to Northeastern, to Lamu, to get artifacts.
For sure.
To get pieces of history so he could keep them for us to see.
Yeah.
And he had so much... The reason why they even moved to the archives is because some of them got burnt down somewhere else.
Close to I&M, they had a gallery that it burnt down. So some of his collection is at the archives.
Yeah.
Some of the other collection is at Nairobi Gallery.
Yeah, Nairobi Gallery.
So that's like another place I'd recommend for someone to go check out.
As I digress, as we get to the two other places, do you feel like you are, like his memory is living through someone like you? Like he's looking down and saying... Thank you, God, for someone like Wango. Because this is why I was doing it in the first place. So people can continue to love themselves and love Nairobi and love Kenya as they are.
Yeah.
Do you feel you're living through a living testimony of his work?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Because ideally, he definitely had that vision of me living this work of art here.
Yeah.
It will speak to some.
Yeah.
And hopefully those people get, you know, to continue and pass this message down generations.
Yeah.
Because I'm probably like... say like three generations after him.
Yeah.
But you never know, we probably get the impact going down many generations later because, you know, a people without a knowledge of their identity is like a tree without their roots.
Wow, that's beautiful. In the year 2400, we will not, nobody will know who we are, but they will know what we left.
For sure.
And the two other places that somebody has to visit when they're in Nairobi, whether they're Nairobians.
I would recommend...
Bye, Sage. Before Sage goes, you have a crush on Sage, right? So Sage is going. Do you have a crush on Sage?
Well, she's beautiful, so...
That's not the answer. We know Sage is hot. Sage is hot AF.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a crush on Sage? And why?
Okay.
Like, what draws you to her?
I think she has quite a calm spirit, which I like.
A sage spirit.
Yeah, man. Very zen. Like Sage.
Yeah.
She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
Plus, she seems like a nice person. Kind and all that.
So, when I told you to speak to the camera and tell your mom what she means to you, because of all the things she's been able to provide for you, you were just like, oh my God, thank you. 3 words for your mother. Then for Sage... 1927 words.
Nah, I just say she's kind.
You've literally filled up a whole Kenya composition. Not less than 1.5 pages for Sage. Wow. Moms really struggle for their kids. But I understand, mom, these people never see. Mom, me, I got your back. So the other two places that apart from Sage's heart, I had to. The other two places that you feel that we have to you know go check out.
Railways Museum.
Yeah, you know me. I love that place.
Well, partly because there's a whole history about you know the whole. The Lunatic Express,
yeah,
which is a railway,
yeah,
and there's a lot of art there because at some point I was an artist.
Yeah. And we have my friend. Remind me your name again. Evans has bought for us. Hey, Evans, this looks nice. Evans, what is this? It's a what?
Beef chomain.
Beef chomain. Chomain, like Wam Chomez.
Wam Chomez.
Thank you. Evans is from Nude. Evans literally sends nudes. To all the guests here. That's what he has done. His brother's notes. Thank you, Evans. Mm. So now, as you tell us about the Railway Museum and the Lunatic Express and when we talk about the museum, am I holding, is it the right way? I think it's the right way.
At a minute, so, guess what, Kappa? Let's see how that
so
goes.
You need to get your, no, do it on your own.
All right.
So we're having the Wam Chomez. Mm-hmm. So remember we were at NSK, that's Nairobi City Kitchen, my favorite restaurant, you guys know by now. I was the first Kenyan to, I launched this restaurant. So the story here is... I don't know how to use...
Bro,
I don't know how to use chopsticks. I don't know. So why are you worried? Break them.
Okay, sawa.
I just know. Should we Google how you're supposed to hold them? Iggy, could you please come and show us? Hey. Just show your hand. Just go around and show us. I'm doing it well. So yeah, you're supposed to. Okay. So this. See. Oh, you're a lefty.
Yeah, man.
So above the second finger, you know, in the between the middle finger and the index finger.
I'm holding it.
Okay. And then now we're gonna try and eat this with you.
Sour.
But now we try eat it as you tell me.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That's a new.
So I mean this is the thing, guys. I know we're talking about Karibu Nairobi, but also about the Nairobi Street Kitchen. The point is travel.
Mm.
We say, what do we say in our tribe? He who doesn't travel thinks it's the mother who cooks best.
Okay.
In Kikuyu we say what? The one who doesn't travel thinks it's the mother who cooks the best.
Yes.
So when you travel, you realize, my mother cannot cook. People are cooking and it's in a loving way. To mean travel and see.
For sure. So, kwenge kuona mengi.
Oh my God.
Safa.
Yeah. But this is hot.
Watch out to one.
Ay.
Hey.
I got it.
Okay. Hey, Morio. So,
you only got one.
Man.
And a leaf. That's now on your beer.
Okay, at least I took a broccoli.
Since you're Amrasta, do you eat like on you don't eat meat? Are you Amrasta like that? Are you a Rastafarian?
No.
Oh my God, this is so hard.
I do not identify as a Rastafari, but I borrow a lot of ideologies from many different communities and beliefs. Because there's always a commonality in a lot of them.
And but you eat meat.
But one thing I acknowledge is with the meat you're having, it's important for... If you're killing an animal, kill it with dignity.
Okay.
Don't let it suffer.
Okay.
So, if you're keeping animals, don't have them like stuffed up in a place, you know. At least treat them with
dignity. I feel like you're becoming better. I'm very worried. This is so wrong. I showed him how to hold the chopsticks. Now I can't put any food in my mouth.
And guess what, man? That's
how. Oh my God, I give up.
That's how we're moving
fork.
In Nairobi.
Me, I want a fork.
Do you make wangumu?
Bring a fork.
You make wangumu.
Bring me, just bring a fork. Akaranga, go and get me a fork. I can't. I can't do it. I think I've been breaking it down for you.
Bro, I'm guessing, man.
No, but I feel like my moving the food around, there's a guy called Jordes Mwaura.
Yeah, Fresh Koba.
He's here looking at me. He does not know he's coming to do the same exact thing.
Freshest boy in Nairobi, man.
He's the freshest boy in Kenya.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Not in Nairobi, in Kenya.
Wanna do vitu amazing sun out here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Jordes with the gang. Yeah, so big respect to them.
Since you want to show off, continue safaring.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why we're sharing food is because it's important to share food with your friends.
Sharing food is important in every African setup, you know.
Yeah.
There's no malice if you share food.
Mmm. That's a deep way of looking. I never thought about it like that.
Hey.
Another fork. He can't.
Yeah, food unites people.
So, do you know how to cook? Do you cook anything?
Yeah, man, I cook.
What do you cook? Not because you're a bachelor.
Uh-huh. Well,
like, do you know how to cook?
I know how to cook, but
because bachelors can cook anything.
Ugali mayai.
Yeah, that's not cooking. That's not cooking. Ugali is very bland food, by the way.
But it's,
when your friends come to Karibu Nairobi and they want to travel and see the world,
uh-huh.
I know they tell you that ugali is tasteless. Ugali is just. Ugali is not. Ugali is bland.
Unacha yungwe kidogo, so the flavor.
Ah no, that's just no. So you cook ugali and that's
scrambled
for eggs. My listeners in America, what is ugali in? That's grits. He cooks
like,
grits.
Like pap.
Pap.
So it's a flour. It's porridge. Cornmeal porridge.
It's hardened corn porridge. Corn flour.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So the two other places that you must travel and see in Nairobi.
Mm-hmm. At times there are shows happening.
Yeah. We are the second or second Railway Museum, sorry.
Yeah.
No, let's go back to the Railway Museum. It's the Lunatic Express.
Mm.
We get to see a lot of German
machines
and the story, you know, behind the Queen using the railways, the Kenyan railways, you know, we get to see about the cutlery that was used then.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the things like the seating arrangement, all that stuff, including ships.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that's a place that you must, and it's so cheap and affordable. Oh my God.
And also, there's a lot of graffiti there. It's probably, I think, the longest mural in Nairobi.
Mm.
Because I was once part of a collective of artists called, under a studio called Das Depot.
Mm-hmm.
At Railways.
Mm-hmm.
And this was under a very great artist.
Yeah.
Called Mukabi Panye.
Panye.
And man, the vibe there was amazing. I met a lot of beautiful artists there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Das Depot was a home to a lot of us until it got to a point they were like, okay, we need to use this space, so you artists need to figure out where you'll work.
Yeah.
So that kind of adds a spice to this whole space.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Railways Museum, highly recommended. Another nice place, but it could be a bit traumatic to others, is the August Memorial, Bomb Blast Memorial Park.
Okay.
Close to railways.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of history in regards to the bombing that happened in 1998, close to the American Embassy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really nice place for people to go understand the history of this country and not taking for granted, you know, the peace that we have.
Mm-hmm.
For people to see the aspect of community.
Yeah.
And Kenyans showing up for each other. Because at the time, it was a very trying time for this country.
Mm-hmm.
But people showed up for each other because, you know, a tragedy had come and it affected everyone in this country. And people had to come through for each other. It was a devastating moment for everyone in this country.
Yeah.
So, you know, it reminds us that, you know, we're always there for each other. During the good and the bad times, we always have to be there for each other.
And that's what makes our people, in our difficult times and in our laughing times and our turn-up times, but especially in our most difficult times, that's when we learn who we are as people.
For sure.
Are you eating Nama? You're going to let people think that I've been eating the guests' food?
Bro, I'm enjoying these noodles. As much as, you know, we're still experimenting with chopsticks.
Let's talk about your art now.
Yes.
How do you survive in this Nairobi being an artist? How do you... I know you have a beautiful, beautiful workshop and sort of shop also.
Yeah.
In Lavington. Mm-hmm. But how do you, and also online, you're very big online in terms of like pushing your art and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you survive COVID, you know, bad policies, punitive taxes towards creatives in this Nairobi? Mm-hmm. How do you survive?
Bro, I think it's the aspect of also being in a lot of different ventures.
Mm-hmm.
It helps keep me afloat. You're not like really out of the water, but you're just, you know, your head is out of the water. Because trying to have multiple streams at least helps sustain, you know, the different things I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because the aspect of Karibu Nairobi with the tours I'm doing.
Yeah.
Having apparel under Karibu Nairobi as well.
Yeah.
Curating events and...
Please tell us some of the things that you sell, the merchandise you sell.
So...
You've got this.
Yeah, I have such pins.
Yeah.
The t-shirts.
Yeah.
Karibu Nairobi started with... I used to do tie-dye socks. Until I could no longer find socks in Nairobi. So that's how like...
But why socks? Why did you start with socks?
Because...
Did you not have socks growing up? And you're like, my life... my life mission. I will never lack socks in my life.
Nah, it was actually like me and a friend of mine were just chilling. So he like... the apparel, we actually started like doing it with him.
Yeah.
And we... kind of like brainstormed on like what product can we have out there that's different.
Mm-hmm.
So the socks was a way to do it, and we do tie-dye socks.
Yeah.
Which did amazing.
Yeah.
Till I think probably like a policy came in place and we could no longer find white socks. Because ideally we work with white cotton socks.
Yeah.
For the dye to, you know, be effective. And
You also take care of the environment by ensuring that you are using recycled socks.
Well, we started with, you know, mtumba socks, but now it gets to a point you're like,
you can't get enough. I mean, the supply isn't consistent.
Exactly.
Yeah, because
you also
the prices are not consistent.
Yeah, you also want some level of consistency with the product you're putting out there.
Yeah. Okay.
So it got to a point we had to like rethink of other things to deal with.
Yeah.
So at some point, we even got into like doing tie-dye baby clothes. So we'd customize, someone tells us, okay, we want such a color. So we do onesies and bibs and like all these baby clothes in the colors they'd want.
Yeah.
Then got into, we did like a campaign called The Humanist, Mtu ni Utu, where we did like, it was like a half black dyed, then half white.
Yeah.
And did like a whole campaign around that, where we even did like a mini docu around the Humanist campaign. So if you check out my YouTube, Wango Alfred, you'll see like a story we did of a good friend of mine called Bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Kibera Ghost Rider.
Bacteria. So you guys are infecting the world with goodness.
With good bacteria, man.
Yeah.
Because the world needs a whole lot of positive vibes and humanity.
Yeah.
You need to be reminded that there's still acts of humanity out there.
How do you cultivate your creativity in terms of like the people you partner with, the people you meet up and work with?
Mm.
How do you ensure that, you know, your friendships are...
Yeah.
I mean, they're symbiotic, but also they're productive, like you're not just out here turning up, going for gigs and whatever, but you're actually growing each other in the industry.
I think, first of all, as an individual, you first have to do a lot of work on yourself, knowing what you want, because you definitely attract who you are.
Yeah.
So by the time you're getting to a spot and you meet someone and your energies are very in sync, they're definitely on the same wavelength with you. So it wouldn't be difficult working with them, even before you get to see their craft. But already on like your first interaction, you know, you're having conversations that you're like, okay, I like how they're thinking.
Yeah.
That's already a good starting point. And from there, you know, you create magic.
Yeah. We were talking about before how I've realized that this story just left like that.
Okay.
The things that you cook.
Oh.
You told us ugali and mayai.
Ugali, mayai. I enjoy doing like meat. So beef. Chicken, like some kenyeji chicken.
Please tell us things that will make you get a wife right now.
Yeah.
Surprise us.
Nah,
tell us, you know me and my lasagna done.
Nah, I don't know how to cook fancy food.
Like, me and I can make some pretty good mutton.
Nah,
done.
Bro, I just make good kenyeji chicken and some vegetables.
So when you make by saying good kenyeji chicken, like do you, kenyeji means, what does it mean again?
Indigenous? There's,
no, not indigenous.
Indigenous chicken.
No, it's not indigenous. There is a name they call it. There's a name they say it in English mm-hmm. when the chicken is one that just roams around.
Free range.
Free range.
Okay.
Thank you. Not okay. Indigenous.
But Kienyeji, man. Yeah. Kienyeji chicken. Yeah.
I am never going to look at Kienyeji the same way again. I want to be like, I want indigenous chicken.
Yeah.
So free range chicken basically means the one that wakes up in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, some of us were really raised free range style.
Yeah.
You wake up and whatever you eat is on you.
The chicken goes out hustling.
It's
man.
On you.
Yeah.
And
man.
The chicken knows how to come back home.
For sure.
But these other ones, they leave the house. It's a wrap. Yeah, it's a wrap for them.
Yogurt,
So do you like chase after them, like slaughter them, or you just go and buy the one that's slaughtered?
Yeah, I go somewhere, then like they slaughter for you.
When was or you've never slaughtered a chicken?
I have, but I'm not a big fan of the slaughtering part.
Why? You feel sorry or mercy for the chicken?
I don't know. It's so something.
You know, I don't want to laugh because these people get cancelled. But I want people to know I am asking the questions. I just want to know.
Now, I prefer someone else, like, you know, dealing with that. Then I get to, after that, now, you know, plucking the feathers, getting.
But
the
you still don't outside. Want to see the chicken in pain. Is that what you're trying to say?
Okay. They better make it quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like let it die in dignity.
Are you an empathetic person? You feel like you have a lot of empathy.
Yeah, empathy. For people. Empathy is one of like my values. So whenever I'm handling any situation, I have to be very empathetic.
Yeah.
Because I think it's also a skill that came in handy with my photography.
Yeah.
As a storyteller using photography, I have to put myself in your shoes.
Yeah.
When telling your story, because ideally, me telling your story, I don't want to have a biased. Outlook when writing this story.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also not, I don't want to victimize you as well.
Yeah.
So it's looking how can I like understand your story and how do I put it out there in a manner that it's very subjective.
Yeah.
Whereby now the audience can now look at the story and perceive it as how they, you know, how they relate to the situation with their life. Because all of us have different experiences.
Yeah.
And you relate and you consume information differently depending on your background and experiences.
I mean, as artists, we have a huge responsibility to, you know, fight for the rights of other people, be empathetic, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But we don't have, I mean, the crop of artists that we are now. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Njay, you know Njay. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know Njay, right? The guy who does these rings.
I've seen.
Yeah, so I was talking to him and you know he's telling me, Anto, what can you guys do as artists to talk about the ills that are happening?
Okay.
Can you sing about them? Can you do plays? What do you do in this very tumultuous times? And I told him, Jay, I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you, me, I'm afraid. I am not those artists who are gonna be like fella and out here chanting people's names and ministers' names. Because we live in a world where before, I mean there were assassinations. But before you could, like you said, in a community of people who are like-minded, who would take care of you, who would hide you, exile you.
Yeah.
Now, I could literally be killed from this food that we've eaten right here through some agent who has been sent and I've been hiding myself. So there's a lot of fear in terms of creating works that will scare or shock or desensitize or, you know, that kind of, or incite people. Do you still feel that this is the job of artists or creatives to talk about the ills that happen in society? Or do you feel like, no, you guys are always leaving us to that work. You're gaslighting us to do the work that you should do at the ballot.
Okay.
Is this our job to talk about the things that are affecting us in this country
or in Africa? That's quite an interesting question. Because ideally, being an artist is, it's a crown. Heavy is the head. So ideally, your whole purpose coming here is to tell the story of your environment, your people.
Yeah.
So, yes, in as much as you would want to blame the people because they can make the decision on the ballot, but you're a reflection of your environment.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a lot of ills in the society, it will reflect in your work because that's what you are brought onto this world to do. And it doesn't have to take an event happening just because there are protests happening this 1 week. And this is the week that now we decide to sing songs against social ills. But there are social ills happening every day.
It needs to be your DNA.
Bro, you need to stand for something.
Yeah.
And if you want to stand against like the ills happening in the society, then that's what you need to be preaching the whole time. Not just when like the society things are messed up.
Yeah.
People need to see you and see you like you stand for something. People like Amilcar Cabral and Thomas Sankara, they stood for something their entire life.
Yeah, it's and not, they died for it.
Exactly. It's not that one thing happened and all of a sudden they were vocal.
Yeah.
And when things are cool now, they're speaking a different language. No, your work it, your work reflects a lot about what's happening in the society.
Yeah.
So whenever people in another country get to see my art, they understand, yeah, oh, this is a situation in, yeah, Kenya, this is a situation in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily when something big happens,
yeah,
but entirely people in your space and, yeah, your circle already, yeah, know that Anto speaks for this.
Yeah.
So it's about having something that you stand for,
yeah,
and you stick to it.
What you said is powerful because I get you, you know, sometimes, and that's when you say the heavy is the head that wears the crown, is some people are going to be vocal about stuff because at that moment, the gut and the bravado to do those things is to save the soul. While if you're doing it just for a one day moment, your whole gut and bravado is to save your gut.
Yes.
It's for your stomach.
For sure.
Because then people make noise or they activate themselves, yeah, or they, you know, whatever, just because they want to be called into offices.
Yeah, man.
Until stop making noise. Because we've seen some people have lost their lives.
Yeah.
Now you want to shout, no, let's keep you quiet,
yeah,
by buying you a car, by making you an nominated, yeah, MP,
or
nominate
just,
you to parliament.
Or probably, just, there's something you just want to push and,
exactly,
you're like, this is the perfect opportunity
so
for that.
So you don't really mean it. And,
yeah,
you're saying that it means that there's nobody,
yeah,
who's awake.
For sure.
And even if they are, a lot of times, we people, for example, in mainstream media are not highlighting the people who talk about some of these things. Because I know Kenyan artists, visual artists,
yeah,
will paint and they will talk about stuff like this.
Yeah.
That people just don't want to go and see in the exhibitions. They probably don't understand them or they won't give them the time of day.
Yeah.
So we are there. We just need to be heard more.
Yeah.
But I love what you said. You need to stand for something.
Yeah, and also that's where things like public art comes in, or,
yeah,
graffiti.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so you guys won't see my art in galleries. I'm putting it out there. Because the same thing advertisement agencies do. They'll put a whole brand on a billboard in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And you'll have to see it every day.
Exactly.
And they don't ask for permission.
Exactly.
And that's why you'd see like graffiti artists having stuff everywhere. Because,
yeah,
it's like, okay, you guys have to consume this.
Yeah.
So this and this is happening in the country.
Yeah.
You're putting it on a wall. And you guys have to see it. In as much as some will term it as vandalism.
Yeah.
But in the few days it will be up there, you guys will have to see it by force.
Yeah, they say it's vandalism because now the message is not in their power anymore.
For sure.
And when it's someone else's power, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's vandalism. That's,
yes,
a wastage. Whereas in their power, someone has to pay to,
yes,
see it. Though we see it for free, then that becomes art.
Yes.
And the one thing about art that I learned when I was studying intellectual property is that one of the reasons why copyright in American law was a huge issue, not to be, they had to take care not to elitify or, you know, make it elitist.
Yes.
That only certain people can call something art.
Yeah.
So thereby it deserves copyright. And some things, and no, that's not artistic enough.
Yeah.
And because it's you who's saying it, it's not artistic enough, so it's not copyrighted. So it's good for us to learn a lot of these things.
Yes.
You're very knowledgeable as far as history is concerned, as far as art is concerned, as far as creativity is concerned. But let's talk about the crown on our heads. That is our rasta.
Yeah.
I am very cognizant of the fact that people call rastas dreadlocks. And I'm constantly reminding myself not to call them dreadlocks. Because of the history that comes with what we have on our heads.
Yes.
Please give us a little background about why you have rasta, what it means to you, and what it should mean to people who, especially now that we're not really fighting for our freedom, to be decolonized, what it should mean to people when they see us with rasta.
Yeah. First of all, there's that aspect of homage as well to Mau Mau.
Yeah.
Because you find also like the Rastafari movement were inspired by these guys who are termed as barbaric.
Yes.
Because they are like fighting all this imperialists in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
So when guys out there are like, damn, there are guys here with like, their hair all out and they're fighting for freedom.
Yeah.
So for them, they felt like they're standing with these guys, like a show of solidarity.
Yes.
So there's that aspect. Also, there's a sense of freedom in it.
Yeah.
Because ideally, if my hair grows long and it mats and becomes, you know, this, it's part of you, it's part of your identity. So for me, I feel like it's me expressing my identity to the fullest.
Yeah.
And like a sign of identity, because like as you say, there's a crown. You find that certain things are expected from you. I'm always walking in town and I meet like the most unfortunate of people.
Yeah.
Because they know if you have, you know, such hair,
yeah,
you you have a good heart,
yeah,
you're humble and all that,
yeah,
it's sort of like a positive kind of peer pressure, yeah, because now the less fortunate in the society know that this person has a good heart and they'll help me out.
Wow.
And now little kids in the streets will walk up to you and they're like, oh, could you like buy me food today? You're like, okay, today wasn't a good day.
Yeah.
I don't have money.
Yeah.
But if there are days, like if you have something, you'll give to them. But there are days you won't have something.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, okay, don't worry.
Yeah.
I know tomorrow it'll be a better day.
Yeah.
And this is someone who lives on the street, but they're wishing you like good fortune.
Yeah.
Bro, I don't take that lightly.
Yeah.
And that happened because they saw my hair and they already had a certain prejudice that's very positive.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives me like a kind of a reassurance that you're already like a beacon of good tidings in the society.
Yeah.
People see you as some positive energy. So, man, I appreciate that a lot. So, you know, I enjoy having my hair.
Yeah, for me,
and my hair is like, it's also like an antenna.
Yeah.
Because ideally,
this is very spiritual.
Because
for me, even.
Yeah. Because if there's any danger, you realize like even the hair, the strands on your hands.
Yes.
It's just imama.
Exactly.
Now imagine all this hair. You can feel energy.
Feel energy.
Uko damu yango ikubaliane na u, but it's because like your instinct, your intuition is very strong.
Yeah.
And hair does that.
For me, what the relationship I have with hair is very interesting. And sad at the same time.
Okay.
Interesting because, I mean, I'm lucky that my hair grows very fast.
Yeah.
So naturally, my
parents not the case with me.
But still, there's people who try and it does not grow. So I had no option but to grow out the hair.
Okay.
Then also, the sad part is that for me to grow out the hair, I had to lie and say that I was doing some movie.
Okay.
And I had to have dreadlocks. Don't worry, mom, I'll cut the hair later.
Yeah.
And then the hair was never being cut.
Years later,
so one time
waiting.
My mom tells me, ile movie, I'm like, movie gani?
Yeah.
So I caught myself in the lie. I was like, ah, ile movie secret.
Yeah.
So why did you still grow the dreadlocks?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know.
Yeah, movie takuja bad.
You know, but then the thing is, the sadness for me in that scenario is that I have to explain to my mom who's Kikuyu, or to anybody else who is Kikuyu, as to the importance of what this hair means. That my being able to sing what I can sing, to dress the way that I can dress, to have this podcast, this building to exist here, to walk in the streets the way that I walk and the way that I dress and be who I am, is because of people who had dreadlocks, who had to have them cut. And by being cut by the roots is by dying for me to have that freedom.
Indeed.
And then I have to constantly explain to a black person why this should not be a point of a conversation for anybody.
Yeah.
Why this, anybody who's a police officer can have this and be at their job.
Yeah.
Somebody who wants to work for the government can have this and still be able to deliver. But we have to constantly bring ourselves down. We have to constantly explain ourselves. I feel very sad.
To explain your Africanness.
Imagine. Explain, this is me.
Yeah.
This is the most natural that our people kept their hair.
Bro, do you know, dreadlocks even were way before the colonial administration
came
here.
This is way before. I mean, because this is how people kept their hair.
Do you know, the pastime activity for a lot of young warriors, like Kikuyu warriors at the time, they'd be like decorating each other,
exactly,
making each other's
hair.
So, and the fact that they have even like, there's a Kikuyu name for locks called the Mendega.
Mendega.
And constantly they'd be plaiting each other's hair. And what happens, you'd cut, once you get a wife, now your wife would cut your hair. So you would be said like you got someone to shave your hair.
Yeah.
But there are certain people in society who would have their hair out. And this included artists and spiritual leaders and people like blacksmiths. Because blacksmiths are also spiritual leaders in
Aturi.
The society.
Yeah.
Because if you're able to extract metal from soil, and right now we can't do that, that must have been very spiritual.
Yeah.
So they're among the few people who would still have their hair even after getting married.
Yeah.
And even little kids, if you would have been seen that they have some sense of like some spiritual power, they'd be like prophets in the society.
Yeah.
They'd have some hair left up here whenever they're being shaved.
Yep.
And now whenever someone saw that kid, they knew this kid needs to be protected at all costs because they're about to give us the answers in this society.
Yeah.
And you see it across many societies in the world. You see like this Shaolin, people with some hair up here.
And when they untie the bun, it's very long hair.
Exactly.
You because, see people like monks, they cut their hair for that significance.
Yeah.
They're those who keep their hair all the way to as long as it will get.
Exactly.
They will not touch their hair.
Yeah. So you realize it's something, there's something about hair and intuition and spirituality.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's interesting because I really feel we need to demystify what hair means, and but then also the effect of the white man on our the way we view ourselves and the way we view our hair.
Yes.
Because even the name dreadlocks, I refuse to use that term dreadlocks all the time.
Yeah.
Someone is like dreads, I'm like, nope, I don't have dreadlocks.
It's a rasta.
I have rastas.
Yeah.
And because I only because and even sometimes I feel nice when I meet anybody and they're like rasta.
Yeah, man.
They're like they just feel like you have, like you said, they're just good vibes.
Yeah.
So it's we're constantly judging ourselves based on the yardstick of somebody who already told us we were not enough.
Mm.
Speaking of which, as we conclude, we are able to communicate because of the language that we speak. We're now speaking the colonizers' languages in English. We can speak in Swahili if we want to. We can speak in Sheng. But the one thing that you and I share is our mother tongue. And a lot of people do have their mother tongue, even if, whether it's English or French or Portuguese or it's Zulu, Xhosa, it's Ndebele, whatever.
Yeah.
We come from a generation that I don't know if it was a thing with the more English you speak, the more outspoken you are, the more eloquent you are, the more opportunities are available for you.
Yeah.
So our parents sort of didn't really care if we spoke English, Kikuyu or not, or our mother tongue. For us, it was, what do you need to grasp to get you to the next level? And your mother tongue is not it.
Yeah.
And again, the conversation around self-hate. Why are you so keen on taking a journey on understanding your culture, understanding Kikuyu hieroglyphics, and understanding instruments. And the instruments here, I mean physical instruments and spiritual instruments, that is human beings who are immersed in the Kikuyu culture for you to find yourself. Why are you all of a sudden interested in finding out who you are?
Bro, it's a matter of finding self.
After I've said all those things, you should have said king. All those deep things, you have said king. The reason. I was like, bro.
Jabba.
What? What?
I called you Jabba.
Those are not stories, are Jabba. Those are like...
No, there's...
Oh, Jabba.
Jabba.
Yes, like, you know. Yeni, like, thank you.
So ideally, it's a matter of finding self.
Yeah.
Because this is the identity you're born with before other identities come in.
Yeah.
You know, this is an identity that you can trace down many generations.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a matter of, we got to a point where, you know, COVID came and all other systems that help propagate a lot of brainwash had been closed at the time. You know, things like schools at the time.
Yeah.
They're like a system.
Yeah.
Schools, religious institutions at the time, they closed down. So people had time to be with themselves and really understand. So who am I without all these other aspects? Because from the moment you're born, you're already introduced to this whole other system. So I think I had time with myself and I got deep into, you know, digging stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm getting this new information and I'm relating a lot to it.
Yeah, what are some of these things that you found out about yourself or about the Kikuyu culture?
Nah, you know, you get to understand things like your clan. You understand the power that your clan has. We read stories in the Bible of people who had certain powers, but you want to tell me that it's only in this time and age that these powers don't exist? Then you realize, oh, really, even in my African setup, like, people had certain powers.
Yeah, dreamers and prophets.
You go to someone and they tell you, you know, go and do this and this. And if you're having any misfortune, if you're sick, you go to someone. All they needed to do is to go to a forest and get, you know, the intuition. That was a power. They're very grounded. And for me, I was like, I think we have this power. The same power that you'd speak good things onto your life. That's something very deep. That's something, when a child was born, ululations had to be there.
Exactly.
For a girl, there were 4 ululations. For a boy, 5 ululations. And for both of them, one ululation that was very important is one, it's called Oradhi, which is like being a prophet, that you can speak good things in your life and that they happen. That's a power that we have, but we don't. You need to say it to yourself a lot. You need to say good things to your life a lot. That's you being a prophet in your life. And I was like, yes, we have this power, but you don't say it enough. So constantly I was like, let me go deeper. I need to understand the power I have. And I need to teach the people around me. Generations later on need to know the power they have. You know, there's one of my favorite artists, Chronix. He says that, you know, there's a song called Black is Beautiful. I love that song.
They never told us
that black is beautiful. Yeah. So he's like, what will happen when kids are born and they see themselves in books where they were kings, and now they're in a whole society. They're like, well, we oppressed, but we see ourselves in books, you know, as gods,
yeah,
as kings,
black witches,
yeah,
black castes,
yeah. So
black, yeah.
Kids, when they are born, they need to know that they have a lot of power.
Yeah.
And that's why for me, I was like, okay, let me take up this role, understand my power, and teach people the power they have.
Yeah.
That's one way of liberating minds.
Yeah.
Because I feel, in as much as, yes, we'll always complain that things are not working, it's because we've not allowed ourselves to tap into our innermost power.
Mm.
And you're like, okay, this is what we believe in, and we know it's right, and we push it, because we have that power.
Wow.
We have the power of getting ourselves from, you know, this whole situation that it seems like, you know, we can never get out of this hole.
Yeah.
But bro, we have the power. We've always been powerful. But
I like that.
Yeah, man.
And thank you for liberating us with such amazing conversation. I mean, I feel like every conversation that I've been having has to have a part two, so I can get to know now that we are post-COVID.
Yeah, man.
You know, now that you're doing more Karibu Nairobi.
Whole new age.
But before we finish, tell me about hiking and what your problem is. You don't like your house. Why are you always hiking?
Yeah, man. It's a cult, bro.
Genuinely, what is your problem? Because you're trying to make the rest of us look so less.
So I think, apart from my hair that gives me a sense of grounding.
Yeah.
Being in nature gives me a very deep sense of grounding.
Mm.
So I work with a community called Let's Drift.
Yeah.
It's a community.
Let's Drift. So just means that's go with the flow. Let's go.
Yo, we move.
Yeah, let's
be
move.
Be like water.
Uh-huh.
Be like water.
Yeah.
You know, water, it either goes around
obstacles. Exactly. It's fluid. Just
or it,
go. Yeah.
Or it passes with the obstacle.
True that.
Yeah. So you be like water. So ideally, it's a community of adventurous people, and it all involves a lot of hikes.
Mm-hmm.
So most weekends I'm out in nature, and it's a whole opportunity, first of all, for me to be a leader and step up, you know, giving people a sense of direction on the trail. I enjoy teaching people. On some of the hikes, you know, I'm always in a good mood. I'm like,
most you're not.
Nah, at times I just want to be in my space. At times, you know, you want to be.
About to join you, now I'm worried.
Nah, what happens?
I don't know if I should.
Nah, the hikes, you know, I'll just go and I want to be in my space.
Yeah, you also want to be led.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I also enjoy like teaching history. You know, I go to different places, and for instance, like this coming weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to a hike in Kereita Forest.
Yeah.
Kereita means Kereita. Is like war.
Yeah.
So it was a forest where the Maumau would hide during the whole...
place of the fight, of the fighters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there are caves in there that we usually go hiking.
Mm.
And it's in a place called Lari, which in 1953 was a hotbed for the Lari massacre.
Yeah.
And I've teach people once we go there that this is the history of this place.
Wow.
A lot of blood was shed on these nice tea plantations that we walk on. And it's very important for you to acknowledge that the history you're enjoying right now.
Yes.
People had to die.
The freedom to even be here.
Yes, man.
People had to die for us to even be able to come to this
exactly,
place.
Exactly.
Wow.
So at times I want to teach people about the history.
Yeah.
I enjoy plants because, you know, with a background in
What type of plants?
Man, plants, all plants. As long as it doesn't kill you.
Do you know when, remember when we were kids?
Uh-huh.
And they used to tell us that you're supposed to remove weed, like man weed.
Yeah.
Little did they know
that
there are people who are going to love weed.
Bro, you actually find kuna... Well, blackjack would be termed as a weed, but it's actually like medicinal.
You miss the drift.
I know. Sodo maple. Unaona?
You miss the drift. when teachers told us that weeds are not good for
unwanted
other plants. Bro.
They call them unwanted.
Do they know in these streets what people are doing with weeds? No. Weeds is a wanted plant.
Medicine. It's medicine.
In fact, now, there's been a lot of, what's that thing called?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of, there's a word the Kenyans like to use.
Mm-hmm.
Masako, like when there's operations to get, you know, this weed out of, like, you know, the peddlers and whatever.
Mm.
So the price of weed has gone up
because
Kenyans are suffering.
Yeah.
Because the wanted plant is really, really very rare. I'm not giving you ideas. I hope you're not getting ideas.
Nah,
to start selling.
Well, sodomaple is, they call it a weed, but inside they are ringworms.
What is that?
Sodomaple.
What is that?
Dogu.
Oh, that green one.
The yellow berries.
Yeah, but it's green first.
Then yeah, it becomes, then becomes yellow.
They say it's like, it's called Sodom's apple.
Yeah, in a side and a ringworm.
So why is it called Sodom's apple? What is that? What is it doing in Sodom?
Interesting choice of words.
Yeah, like why is it Sodom's apple? Yeah. Is it because it's bitter or why?
Silly, but you understand all these things, they have like a significance. In
when nature. Was the last time you had Sodom's apple?
Okay, I haven't had ringworms and stuff.
No, that sounds... Oh my God, you're always missing the drift. I don't want to talk to you again. Sage, this guy is slow. Don't date this guy.
Nah, he's just smart.
No, he's just so slow. Jeez, I can't believe. So anyway, as we conclude, thank you for liberating us with your amazing words of wisdom.
Each one.
And each one teach one. Mm. So thank you. This is something that he was able to draw. I don't know if my videographer can make time and come and zoom into what this guy has drawn for Nairobi Street Kitchen.
Yeah.
This is why I don't like feeding my crew. Mm-hmm. Now they are fed. And this is the problem with NSK. You eat and then you just...
You get comfortable.
Now they are fed and they're just living their good life. It's a good space.
Yeah.
Have you been here before?
Nah, man. It's my first time. I've been meaning to come.
Uh-huh.
I like the vibe here.
Uh-huh.
Would be nice doing a show here.
Yeah, it would be nice doing an exhibition soon. Here. I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to see you do a live show, exhibition.
Because I was recently in Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
And I feel like, okay, I took like nice photos there. It would be nice, you know, people getting to see Kilimanjaro.
Nah, that you can't compare that with this. Moving on. So, what is that? Why are you insulting me? Whoever has my phone, please pick up the phone and talk to the person calling me.
It's a quick sketch I did.
This is the sketch of Nairobi Street Kitchen. We're going to frame this.
Yeah, sure.
And then this, you said, is the most recognizable, which is actually true.
Mm-hmm.
The most recognizable place in Nairobi, which is the KICC. What I didn't get are these potholes. Why are you drawing potholes and showing my... American audience.
Art is subjective. To some people, they're potholes.
It's in a potholes. What are these?
Nah, I just like the patterns. I don't know what I was doing. I was just led by the spirit.
Do you know anyone in Nairobi that looks like this? This feels to me like land in Nairobi that has not been used. There is no politician who will allow land like this to exist.
Well,
this is arable land.
Public space is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people need to... That's why I don't understand why Uhuru Park is not yet open 2 years later.
By the way, I've been telling Ignacio, he knows my cinematographer, I've been telling him every single time that since Uhuru Park opened, apart from the event, I have never been able
to go to... They just opened it for the festival and that was it.
So what's the point?
Because people need public spaces. Unajua pia, it got to a point where like creating this whole classism. If you have
thank you, you go to a mall.
If you're in a public space,
yes,
and but you seem, you know, suit and tie and you're probably waiting for someone.
Mm.
But if you don't look all that, you're idling.
Yeah.
What is idling?
Yeah.
Because.
And how do you idle in your own country? Your own country where you are born, where your fetus has been buried. How are you an idler in that place?
Yeah. So you get it's that aspect of you're also trying to like. You know, classism even for public spaces. But ideally, everyone has a right to enjoy public spaces. Public spaces are very important in every urban and rural setup, you know.
And this is why I love Wangari Maathai. By the way, my biggest hero, and I'm going to do a podcast episode where a guy is going to be tattooing Wangari Maathai on me.
Nope.
She, apart from God, my mother, then there's Wangari Maathai.
Man,
she's the most...
Respect.
Most influential person in my life because I remember watching Wangari Maathai being clobbered nearly to death with blood gushing from her head, fighting for Karura Forest.
She stood for something,
fighting for the fresh air that we enjoy.
Uhuru Park, as well.
Uhuru Park was meant to host the tallest building in Africa, where KANU was meant to have its headquarters.
For sure.
I was a kid reading all the stories, and she fought tooth and nail till the American government called Moi and said, okay, now listen, this thing has brought too much noise.
Yes.
You need to calm your ego.
Yes.
calm your ego and stop wanting to have this biggest building in Kenya.
Yes.
So people, you can have your KANU headquarters. Mm. If there was no Wangari Maathai, we would not have Karura Forest.
Yeah.
We would not have some rivers that are in Lavington.
For sure.
We would not have Karura. A lot of rivers, all the rivers that we have, Nairobi River.
Yes.
Would not have Karura, Central Park, Uhuru Gardens.
Yes.
I mean, guys, some of the things we take
that's
for
why,
granted.
That's why we need to stand for something.
I hope it'll be the next Wango Alfred.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be the next Wango Ajiro.
Yes, indio.
Yes.
Wango Ajiro.
Yes.
Thank you for being so honest and so true so available for us.
Yeah, I appreciate
and
it.
And thank you for liberating us with your truth.
Anytime, man.
So
also,
now,
I appreciate the work you're doing, man.
Thank you so much.
You know, putting out the word out there. It's a space for also us to come and share what we know.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's about me drinking from the fountain of knowledge.
Yes.
And sharing what I have drunk.
Exactly.
Because it's, you know, get your knowledge out there, share your knowledge.
Yes.
Don't be afraid to share knowledge.
Exactly.
And hope that now people will have the wisdom to use that knowledge for the greater good of the society.
Thank you. And thank you, 89-year-old man.
Thayo.
Thayo. I said, you know what I said, right?
Thayo.
I'll be called out for that stuff. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. I was with Wango Alfred. What does Wango mean?
Wango. Go is a shield in Kikuyu.
Ngo.
Go.
Wango.
So Wango.
Wango.
I'm of the shield.
Of the shields.
Yeah.
And me, I'm Mwangi. The shielder.
Kwagaga. Mwangi Kwagaga. Yeah. So.
Bye, guys. He just called me that I like going everywhere.
Well, your
aimlessly.
Personality. Your
Kwanganga
personality.
Means walking aimlessly.
And your personality in Akaevo.
Is aimless.
It's not aimless, but it's very fluid.
Anyway, it's good that I'm not paid for this bill. Thank you. Because the more you insult me, pay for your bill. Bye, guys. Now, when you're on Kenyatta Avenue next time, or Moi Avenue, or Tom Boyer Street, or Mokta Dada Street, or Mwindimbingu Street, or Kimathi Street, at least now you have a little bit of a memory of what that is all about. And if you like hiking, well, good for you too. Next week, let's hike all the way to Nigeria and get to talk to this amazing, amazing guy called Mr. Jordes Feshkoba. He'll be telling us about working with Burna Boy, but even as we do so, please make sure you check out our Instagram at Unlock Your Soul Podcast, on TikTok, Unlock Your Soul Podcast, and on YouTube at Unlock Your Soul Podcast. And let us find out what it means to work with Burna Boy. Here's a little bit of tease. Money is disturbing you, Sindio.
Apana.
You don't know what to do with money.
Don't get it twisted.
You put in teeth.
Don't get it twisted.
Look at the jewelry all over you. Like, what is the, can I help you keep your money?
I mean, as an artist, there are certain things that define you. And I believe that me looking good makes me feel good as an artist. So that's where you're
going to... But even as a person, that's nobody's...
That's the key.
That's
actually,
nobody,
come on to a Jew, that's the key of feeling good. And...